This winter, there's no place like Wicked, the award-winning West End musical. Discover the incredible untold story of the Witches of Oz and how one came to be called good and the other wicked. Wicked at London's Apollo Victoria Theatre. Extra shows added for Christmas.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
I was honest. Was I brutally honest? Yes. But I think that that's the problem. Everybody's so scared to be honest with one another.
This is JSC Radio.
Jason, we can only imagine how excruciating this is. The not knowing at this hour where your child is. Any parent can imagine the horror of that. Have you spoken to any of your son Cody's friends?
Actually, yes, I have. We got woke up last night around 1 a.m. by some of the girls, Cody's friends, knocking on our door, saying that there was a mass shooting at Borderline. Some of his girlfriends got out, but they didn't know where Cody was.
Did they describe to you anything about the scene?
Chaotic. Just like a normal shooting would be, it'd be very chaotic. There's only two entrances, one entrance and then one little exit. So I would figure that a very crowded bar would be very chaotic.
What happens when you call his cell phone?
Nothing. Just rings and rings.
You're listening to the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, we're doing this again. And this, sadly, as followers of this podcast, and by the way, I appreciate you once again listening. This is episode 89 of JSC Radio. People who followed this podcast know how I feel about the scourge of gun violence here in the United States. This is nothing new. It is highly unfortunate, and it is something that it seems this country has no interest in handling. Anyone who's followed this show since 2016 knows that I have said pretty much the same thing after Orlando.
What happened in Orlando was disgraceful and distressing, and unfortunately, it has become a part of the America we live in. We can hold all the moment of silence for the victims that we'd like. We can hold all the vigils, all the rallies, but none of that will mean shit if the people we elect and send to Washington decide not to grow a set and do something about this country's archaic damn gun laws.
I pretty much said the same thing after Las Vegas.
It's one of the worst things about living in the United States is fear that I'm going to get shot by some crazy bastard with a grudge. I'm going to get killed by some guy with a political agenda. I'm going to get killed because some dude had a short circuit and decides he just wants to ice 58 people, wound over 500. It's 600 people in one night. And I got elected officials saying, what can gun laws do to stop something like this? I don't know. You might be able to keep track of the damn guns.
And I pretty much said the same thing after Parkland. What are we doing exactly here? 17 people died, most of them kids. One of them was a football coach, but most of them kids. The harrowing stories of kids hiding under desks, hiding in closets, shaking when the police finally are able to storm the building after the guy's already gotten away and been caught alive riding around in an Uber. The difference between Parkland and Columbine is we didn't have Snapchat. We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have Facebook. We didn't have Instagram. We didn't really have anything resembling social media at the time. Even though we knew how dangerous and how frightening and how scary the prospect is of walking into a school and having some crazy bastard with a grudge or some weirdo terrorist or just some disgruntled teacher or former employee suddenly barge in with a gun and start firing. I don't know what to say. Each time I've gotten on here, gotten progressively angrier and louder and voiced a lot of pain and a lot of hurt and a lot of disgust. And I've been rather incredulous to what we have going on here. A week ago when I did episode 88, I talked about how this current alleged president of ours wants to just magically, in his haste to try to stave off what turned out to be pretty huge gains for Democrats in this past Tuesday's election, that he was bandying about the idea of just arbitrarily getting rid of the most important points of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. And I made it a point to note that you can't do it by edict. This is not a monarchy. He is damn sure not a king. And you can't do that without a congressional amendment to the Constitution. Because if you can do that to the 14th Amendment, you could just as easily do that to the second. Which is, by all accounts, treated as if it is the untouchable number one right in America. More so than freedom of the press, which is under attack by this administration. The 14th Amendment, the 13th, the 5th Amendment, 22nd Amendment, your 20th Amendment, your right to vote. It's so much a part of this country's DNA to allow this to happen. And it happened again in Thousand Oaks, California. We have another day of stories like that that you heard in the open. You have another day of mourning. You have another set of anger. You've got another Twitter hashtag bemoaning another mass shooting. And I brought this up on more than a couple occasions in episodes 11 and 52 and 67. And now episode 89 of how mass shootings, gun violence have just taken off in this century and particularly in this decade. The mass shooting in Parkland at Stoneman Douglas High School, for example, earlier this year on Valentine's Day. That mass shooting bumped the Columbine massacre out of the top 10. It got knocked down to number 11. And the most outrageous thing is that when you look at the top 10 mass shootings in this country's history, number 10, San Bernardino, 2015. Number 9, Parkland on Valentine's Day this year. Number 8, the tower shooting at the University of Texas in 1966. That is by far the oldest one on this list. The San Ysidro McDonald's massacre in 1984, which is number 7. The Luby's shooting in 1991 is number 6. And when that occurred in 1991, the thought of 24 people being mowed down at one time was galling to the nation. That's now number 6. Number 5 was last year's Sutherland Springs shooting. Number 4, Sandy Hook. 2012, 28 people, really 27 because they included the shooter, but 27 people shot dead, a majority of them first graders, kids 5 and 6 years old. Number 3, the Virginia Tech shooting in 2007. Number 2, the Orlando nightclub shooting, the one that elicited number 11, episode 11. And number 1 was Las Vegas, where 58 people were killed. More people died in that shooting than died on one of the flights on 9/11. I could sit here and yell and scream. I could sit here and get angry and loud and swear. And internally, I'm doing that. But at a certain point, it just resonates. It should resonate with sensible human beings. It should resonate with sensible people that something has to give. Something has to change. You can't keep doing nothing. 12 people go in to a country bar. It's no different than what happened in Orlando, except there were fewer deaths. 12 people go into a country bar on a Wednesday night in November in California. And as always, the shooter comes in, guns blazing. The idea that if there had just been a good guy with a gun, everything would have been fine. There was a good guy with a gun there, and he got gunned down before he could get through the door, as I mentioned in episode 11. He's one of the 12 victims. He's a police officer who's on the verge of retirement and was taken out by a cowardly, mentally unstable shooter. A white guy, because let's just keep it real. Most of these shooters are. I know Virginia Tech was an Asian man. I know the Navy Yard shooting was a black man, and that's a rarity. But you know the profile of these guys. I know the Orlando shooter was an Arab American. But you know. This guy comes in, just starts pumping off shots into women. He seemingly had a history of, or into people, not just men and women. He had a history of assault. When he was in the military, he had a violent attitude. They tried to attribute mental illness, PTSD, but I caution against doing that because PTSD does not make people into raging violent maniacs. I'm trying to keep myself as measured as I possibly can be because I'm almost out of energy and emotion for this. Not the emotion of this is awful because it is, but how often do we have to keep going through this? The stakes have been raised. The ante has been upped. Because I must stress to you twice in this decade or in the last decade, really three times in the last decade, the most violent mass shooting title has changed hands. You have to remember that when Columbine happened, it was an international story. 15 teenagers died on that day. There have been 10 mass shootings since then where there have been more. There have been one, two, three of them that have had twice as many casualties as Columbine. That's a problem. Gun control does not mean confiscating weapons. As I've stressed on every single episode that is hit on this topic, you have to go through background checks. You have to go through more hoops to get a driver's license, to rent a car, to buy a car, to rent an apartment, to buy a house, to get a credit card. You have to go through more for all those things than you do to get a gun. And when we talk about mental health, because that seems to be one of those go-to moves to try to deflect away from all the carnage. Sure, let's talk about mental health. Let's talk about how people were called to this guy's house. And so-called experts in mental health didn't see the need to bring him in for observation. Then a few months later, 12 people are dead. Kids, college students, young adults, a police officer shot dead on a Wednesday night at a country bar. Is it any different from what occurred on that Saturday night in the gay bar down in Orlando? Is it any different than what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary School or Parkland at Stoneman Douglas High School or at a concert in Las Vegas where almost 60 people were killed and more than 800 suffered some sort of injury because of guns. It doesn't make a difference if they're semi-automatic rifles or AR-15s or pistols. This dude was walking in throwing smoke bombs and then emptying off clips into people, banana clips, the illegal ones. But yet he was able to get one. Yet he had mental health issues and he had a history of violence and he could still get the gun. This country and its obsession with weapons, its obsession with guns, its obsession with protecting the Second Amendment while the First Amendment is under all-out assault. You've got a president, and I put that in quote marks, who bandies about the idea of ending parts of the 14th Amendment while tucking his head in the sand on the second. You've got a whole new crop of Congress members coming in January, thanks to what happened on Tuesday. Maybe this is the generation that, if nothing else, makes enough noise to start to tilt things in their favor. You can't do much about the Senate, but now you can start to do things. You can start to push a little bit more and push back and fight back, because we can't have too many more stories like what happened there with Jason Kaufman, the gentleman you heard at the start of this segment. He did that interview on CNN not knowing where his son was at the time and was unable to fathom what was going on. You could hear it in his voice. The pain and the fear and the angst and the anguish that he's going through. But this is what our country, quote unquote, allows to continue to happen. They allow to continue to have men having to stand out in front of hospitals wondering where their son is.
What are you going to do next?
I don't have a plan. My plan is basically just wait, go to the hospitals, and hopefully get a phone call from my son or from one of his friends that he has contacted. He hasn't contacted anybody. Even his best girlfriends are out just waiting for him. So we're thinking that in the chaos, he might have dropped his phone and ran. But I don't know. I'm hoping for the best, but I don't know what else to do.
His son was later discovered in the bar as one of the victims. This what we want? Is it? I don't even have it in me to yell. But please understand that I'm pissed off and I'm fed up with this. And so many of these other parents are fed up with this. So many other people are fed up with this. A lot of the people in that bar were survivors of the attack in Las Vegas. Because don't get it twisted, it was an attack. It was a terrorist attack, just like the shooting at the synagogue in Pittsburgh, which was, what was that? That was barely a week ago, wasn't it? 2 weeks ago or something like that. It seems, because everything runs together. It was 2 weeks ago. It was a domestic terrorist attack. And this is how some people expect us to just live for the quote-unquote price of freedom. Some of the same people who were lucky to survive Las Vegas didn't survive this. And there needs to be change. There needs to be more done. I had to get this out. This episode won't be dominated by this. But please understand that we're with you. And for the sensible people who listen to this podcast in different parts of the world, the listeners in Canada and Sweden and the UK and Ireland, Egypt and Northern Africa, and even down in South America and Ecuador. Hola. Muchas gracias. To the people listening across the globe, people listening in Japan and in Spain, who understand what I'm saying and within the realm of my voice, please get it that we here in the United States, we're sick of this crap too. And we need to be better people. And we need to do more as a nation to protect our own instead of protecting our own interests, which is really what a lot of this crap is about. I'm going to take a quick break here. Because coming up as this show goes along, I'm going to have a hell of a conversation with a really good guy who's written a book that can help a lot of people's lives in the professional world. But I wanted to make sure that before I talk to him, I got this out there. We still hear you, and we're with you. And please understand, we want more than thoughts and prayers. My name's J. Scott Smith, and this is the 89th episode of the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. Nothing but love for the people out there in Thousand Oaks, California, Parkland, Florida, Orlando, Florida, Las Vegas, and everywhere else that's been victimized by this scourge called gun violence. This country needs to do something, and we need to do something now. We'll be back after this.
My name is Susan Orfanos. My son was Tel Orfanos. We lost him last night at the Borderline shooting. My son was in Las Vegas with a lot of his friends, and he came home. He didn't come home last night, and I don't want prayers. I don't want thoughts. I want gun control, and I hope to God nobody else sends me any more prayers. I want gun control. No more guns. Thank you.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
I was honest. Was I brutally honest? Yes. But I think that that's the problem. Everybody's so scared to be honest with one another.
This is JSC Radio.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Hey now, it's J. Scott Smith here, the host of JSC Radio, which you can now hear on Stitcher Radio. That's right, Stitcher is radio on demand. Now you can download the free app today, and it's available on iOS, Android, as well as Nook and Kindle Fire. You can take JSC Radio anywhere. The app is free. You can listen anytime, anywhere. Now, if you're wondering what Stitcher is an award-winning free app that lets you listen to all of your favorite shows, plus discover 40,000 news, entertainment, and sports shows such as JSC Radio. You can create custom playlists. You can rate and review this show and others on Stitcher. Please drop a friendly review on the show. Not only is Stitcher available on all smartphones and tablets, it's also in over 4 million car dashboards. It's on demand and on the go. No downloading, no syncing, no wasted memory on any of your devices. You can stream your favorite podcasts, like JSC Radio, for free on Stitcher. If you don't have the Stitcher app, simple. Go to Stitcher.com today or check out the App Store on whichever device you use. Stitcher Radio, be sure to check it out.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
And we swagger when we walk, because by God, we can.
This is JSC Radio.
So what exactly is emotional intelligence?
So the EQ, in the way I define it, is the ability to manage yourself and your environment more effectively to get better outcomes.
Okay, and we also talked about during the commercial break that, do you hear what you're not saying?
Yes, so that's around the perceptions component. That's the second P. So that's around building an effective brand and then maintaining that brand. Mm-hmm. Within the first 7 seconds of seeing you, someone makes a judgment of your value or that you're not valuable. Mm-hmm. And you have the power to make that difference. So what you're not saying can impact how your message is received.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. Welcome back to JSC Radio, Episodia 89. That's episode 89 in Spanish. J. Scott Smith here, and wanted to kind of do a more proper introduction. Want to shout out my man, Doc Illingsworth, whose track, Mach Punch, off his new album, You're No Fun. That's what you hear underneath you right now. Want to shout out the man, Awesome Jones, who does the intro track for this show every week. It's called Blue Chucks. Hit him up on soundcloud.com/awesome, O-S-S-I-M, Jones. Be sure to hit that boy up. Want to shout out each and every one of y'all who support the show across all the different podcast providers, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, on SoundCloud and Stitcher, on Google Play and TuneIn, on Radio Public and Audio Boom, and on Spotify, and of course, iHeartRadio and Player FM. So hit it up, Player. Be sure also to check out the new YouTube page. I got the link for you down below, bit.ly. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/JSCTube to check out the YouTube page. I want to big up everybody who's checking me out on Patreon. Patreon.com/JSC Radio. Thank you, Anna Stevens, the latest patron on Patreon.com/JSC Radio. We keep getting bigger every single week. Back-to-back weeks at that. Back at you with a little consistency, or trying to be around here anyways. I want to thank all of y'all. Be sure to hit up the Patreon page, and there's going to be more stuff coming as we go along, and you get exclusive first cracks at hearing this episode. You got to hear the first segment of this show first on Patreon. So thank you so much for all the support on this program, on this podcast that has still going strong through everything that's been going on this year. This podcast continues to persevere. There are ways you can persevere out here. The gentleman you heard in the intro there is a brother by the name of Marion E. Brooks. And anybody who knows me knows I'm very well read. I'm a pretty learned individual, but I'm not big on reading books. I've never been super huge on quote unquote self-help books until maybe the last couple of years, where I've paid more attention to guys like Gary Vee and Tony Robbins. And Marion E. Brooks is different. It's a black man that I hadn't really heard of him before until an event that was held in Harlem. Yes, I know, New York City.
New York City!
Back in September. And that's actually where I had run into Brittany Noble. You may know her from episode 85, which is still the most downloaded episode in the history of this show by a mile. Shout out to her. And Marion was at the event talking with my griot colleague, Natasha Alford, about this book called What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, Four Keys to a Phenomenal Career. And you heard him, one of the things he was talking about is a central aspect of his book, talking about emotional intelligence, or the emotional quotient, or EQ, which is the offset of the IQ, the intelligence quotient. Well, rather than have me go on and on explaining that, I was able to get that brother in front of me, and we were able to talk about his book, his really incredible rise as an executive in the pharmaceutical industry, and able to get to know more about what drove him to write this book. He's been on this tour. He's been all over the country talking about it. The fact that the day I talked to him earlier this week, actually, when I did this interview, he was coming off of meetings and running all over the place, and we were able to meet up, yes, I know, in New York City.
New York City!
To talk about this book, and also to get more insight on his life. So I would like to welcome, from earlier this week, Marion E. Brooks, the best-selling author of his new book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You. It's time for another conversation on JSC Radio. My name is J. Scott Smith. Welcome back. This is JSC Radio. You're listening to the People's Podcast. Coming to you once again from, wouldn't say the greatest city in the world, because I grew up in the greatest city in the world, but second greatest city in the world, New York City. I am here and honored to be speaking with a best-selling author. He spent 20 years as a corporate executive, 20 plus years, I should say, as a corporate executive in the pharmaceutical industry, but he's written his first book. He's an internationally certified executive coach. His first book is called What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, Four Keys to a Phenomenal Career. We're all trying to get ourselves right. We're all trying to get our careers right, whether you're a journalist, whether you're working as a banker, whether you're trying to make videos, whether you're trying to do podcasting like me. We're all trying to get right, and we need to know the methods to success. And I'm sitting here with one of the more successful individuals I've ever had in front of me on this show, Mr. Marion E. Brooks. Mr. Brooks, welcome to JSC Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, the excitement level and the pleasure is all mine. And I wanted to, I always like to start these off by getting to know the person I'm talking to, because you've done so much. You're an author. You've worked as a pharmaceutical executive. Just give me a little background on you, so the world can get to know you. You've been on TV. I've seen you everywhere. I've talked to people about you before. You had this amazing story. Tell us a little bit more about you and how you grew up, because I know you're coming to us from the state of Texas.
Yes.
You're just like my mother's from the South, too. So you're a Southern guy, just like my mother's from the South, too. Tell me about your upbringing. Tell me a little bit more about you.
Okay. So, yes, so if you look at all of the credentials and all the things that you were describing, you wouldn't expect that from me if you look at the statistics and where I started. I was born to a single mom with three children by three different fathers. And the ironic thing about it is she was the first child of my grandparents to have a child out of wedlock. My grandfather was a minister and my grandmother was a first lady. She was the youngest of four, and she didn't have just one, she had three. And then my dad, he has 11 children by 10 different women.
Wow.
Yes. So early on, I was discounted and counted out of the game. I remember one Thanksgiving, I was around 6 or 7 years old, and I came in from outside and all the adults were in the kitchen area. And I heard someone ask, whose boy is that? And when they said my parents' name, they said, oh, that he doesn't have a chance. That kid won't be anything.
Wow.
And so I started crying and I went to the back, and my grandmother eventually came back there and she said, what's wrong with you? And I was like, well, I don't want to get in trouble. I wasn't eavesdropping, but I heard what they said about me and I want to know why. Is it the way I look? Is it the way I play? Why would someone say that about me? And my grandmother, who was my guiding light and savior, pretty much, said, people will put their limitations on you if you allow them to. What I want you to understand is the only limits you have are the ones that you accept. And she said, I was born in Texas in 1915 as a black woman, and I went to college. You will go to college and far beyond. So she gave me hope, but she also showed me how. And that was just one example of what my grandmother did to make me into the man that I am today. But she always gave me hope, but she also showed me how to be a good person, the value of investing in other people, financial responsibility, all of those ingredients that have helped me to be successful. She gave me the foundation.
You dedicated. I noticed at the very start of the book,
there was a message
to her. What's your grandmother's name?
Sunshine.
Sunshine. Yeah. Because I saw the dedication to her at the start of the book, and you eventually did go on to college. You went to University of Texas, Arlington.
Yes.
Now, you're originally from Arlington, Texas, or where?
From Fort Worth. I'm originally from Fort Worth.
Just outside of Dallas. Okay,
yes.
So UT Arlington, you got your MBA from Emerson University in Garland, Texas.
Yes.
So just to hear about that, about the importance of education, especially for, obviously, for young black men.
Oh, absolutely.
And coming up in a family situation like you had, and I noticed that you'd mentioned your grandmother's influence and the importance of what she's instilled in you. And I noticed that you said in the book, I remember reading that you gleaned a fair amount of your attitude and the way you used your grandmother as like a motivator for who you wanted to be as a person.
Absolutely.
And I saw that. And there was a point where you were very reflective, where you mentioned that even though you wanted to be like your grandmother, you did notice at times you had some of your mother's traits as you were going along, and you were able to root that out or kind of make that a different part of who you are. I guess kind of explain the importance of family and on what that's had on you and what that continues to have on you now.
So it's a great question. And one of the things that you were just describing is the power of my grandmother, Sunshine. So her grandmother was half Native American. So Sunshine was her birth name. And what she did, she gave me a great example of what to be, but I wasn't that yet, right? And how to
right.
be. She had incredible emotional intelligence. And my mother is one of the smartest people I have ever met. Her IQ is off the charts, but she struggles with emotional intelligence and that control. And I used to see how she interacted with my grandmother, and my grandmother never reacted to her. She always responded. And my grandmother always looked like the one in control, and my mother looked like the one out of control. And I wanted to be more like Sunshine. But as I got older, I realized when someone triggered me, I reacted just like my mother. So I had to be conscious of that and take action and learn. That's why emotional intelligence is so important. There are a lot of smart people out there with high IQs, but not a lot of emotionally intelligent people out there. And 80% of success is based on emotional intelligence. So I saw that example as a little kid. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I wanted to be like that.
And you know what? We're going to talk about this book, because the term emotional intelligence, and I know it's called EQ in the book. It's also emotional
yes.
quotient in the book. IQ versus EQ.
Yes.
And since you brought that up, because emotional intelligence is very important, what is the difference for people who may not get it? The difference between your IQ versus your EQ.
So for me, IQ is just being smart, right? That's something that's innate, something that you learn, but it peaks around puberty, around the time you get out of high school. Your IQ is pretty much at its peak, right?
Mm-hmm.
With emotional intelligence, you can learn it. And my definition is your ability to manage yourself and your environment more effectively to get better outcomes. So there are four quadrants of emotional intelligence. People don't really know that. And understanding their triggers. So once you understand your triggers, you're able to manage yourself more effectively. And once you're able to evaluate your environment more from a critical lens, you are able to manage your environment more effectively.
What would you say are the signs of a good EQ?
The signs of a good EQ. Now, one of them is self-awareness. So the primary and the foundation of emotional intelligence is self-awareness. So being able to identify when you are being productive and unproductive based on the decisions that you're making, and also understanding the things that bother you and how you react when you're bothered versus respond. So there's a big difference. And then being able to take the awareness to control. So someone comes up and they're yelling at you and they're doing all this stuff versus you jumping back right at them, being able to identify, okay, what are my options here? How do I maintain control? How do I show up as the leader in this situation? So being able to activate what is called your prefrontal cortex. So I'll step back real quick. So when you're reacting, people with low emotional intelligence, their amygdala is the primitive aspect of the brain. It's the part of the fight or flight or freeze component of the brain from our ancestors, you know, the primitive component. And you just are in the moment. This is how I am. If they hadn't of, I wouldn't have. Those are the types of things that people with low EQ say. But if you have a higher EQ, you're activating the prefrontal cortex. That's the complex thinking and problem solving part of your brain with questions like, what are my options here? How do I stay in the moment? How do I show up as the leader? Those types of things.
And that is a good point. I got to learn a lot about the amygdala. You even mentioned amygdala hijacking is a term that I saw in there when you let almost like when you let your when you let things like anger or just an attitude kind of take control of you, where people, because almost as if when you react a certain way, they've got you.
They got you. They're in control of your behavior at that point. And that's one of the things I want people to know about emotional intelligence. It's not about being passive. It's about managing the situation and yourself. And when you react to how someone else is behaving towards you, you have just given them control over your behavior. And I don't ever want to give my control away.
And that's because I don't know if you played sports or not growing up.
Yes.
I played baseball, basketball, and football. All right, football coaches are always good for kind of having little tidbits like this. And when I'm reading some of this, it's almost like someone took some of the stuff I've heard from football coaches, but really broke it down. Like, you can't let somebody get in your head like that and really make you kind of get off of your focus. And when I think about it, when you've mentioned things like this, when you look at the business world, for example, who are some of the leaders, examples in the business world of having like a high EQ, a high emotional quotient?
I would definitely say Oprah. Hers is, I think, off the charts. Bill Gates handles situations extremely well as well from my perspective. I really like the way he handles, like, even hecklers. I would say President Obama does a fantastic job of staying in the moment and looking at other ways to manage a situation or a conversation. And it's that pivot to say, okay, now they're doing this. Now, what are my options? Because one option is always to come right back at them. Another option is to address it from a different way, engage somebody else, or separate from the situation.
Why is it that the folks that won the last election are so mad all the time?
So those are some of the examples, I think, that people who demonstrate very high EQs.
Obviously, it says a lot about this in the book, but how can people improve their EQ? Say if you're someone, and I always look at ways to try to better myself, too.
Yeah.
And I've been at this 15 years. I've been doing this podcast for 2 years. I've been doing all this different stuff, but I always want to look at ways to get better. So if someone comes up to you and says, I feel like I'm not as self-aware as I should be, or maybe I recognize there are some issues where I'm quick to shift blame or point things. How can somebody improve that EQ to make sure they're not continue to be in the same situation?
Well, other than reading the book and getting the tips I think a key thing, one of the simple things that you can do today, so everyone listening, you can do this today, and it'll help to grow your EQ. Actually, just go home and reflect on your day. Reflect on what went well and what did not go well. And the things that didn't go well during the day, write out what you would have liked the outcome to have been, and then focus on what you could have done differently.
So let's just say this. I'm in an office and getting along, at least I think I'm getting along pretty well about my day, and there's probably something that goes wrong, or maybe there's a miscommunication. And next thing you know, you've got an editor, you've got a coworker in your ear. basically. Rather than, say, lashing out or trying to go back and forth with him, it's take the time to really reflect on, okay, what can I do here immediately? And then going forward, what can be done to avoid the situation?
Exactly. So the first thing, if you're engaged with someone, first you want to make sure that you take a breath. So take just taking a breath and saying and asking yourself a different question. So versus, why is this person doing this? Why are they so incompetent? Why are they so aggressive? All of those negative things, you have to change the questions you ask yourself to activate your prefrontal cortex. So the question can be, okay, how do I manage this situation and show up? I always tell people, show up as the leader. Remind yourself that you need to be the leader in every situation, even if they're your boss. You need to show up as a leader. So what are some of the options that I have to do that? So in the heat of it, and then also understand if you've been triggered. So what are the things that you know that are innate to you? Like for me, I don't like bullies. I do not like bullies at all.
Me neither.
And most people don't like bullies, but I have a visceral reaction to bullies to where I'm going to put them in their place, but that puts them in control of my behavior. So you can manage bullies different ways. You can say, you can come right back at them and give them what they're giving, or you can say, I think your tone and your energy is a little too aggressive right now. I don't think we'll find a good solution. So why don't we come back together at another time? It might make them more angry, but who looks like the person in charge? And then if they continue, you can say, I'm beginning to feel uncomfortable with this situation. I think we might need to have a third party intervene. In that situation, you have gotten your objective. So your objective was to defuse them and to put them in their place, right?
Exactly.
But you did it in a much more professional way, and no one could criticize your behavior based on how you handled it. That's an emotionally intelligent response to a bully.
It's being able to handle tight situations without getting tight yourself.
Exactly. Manage yourself and your environment more effectively. And one of the key things I did want to drop as well around EQ and IQ, when your amygdala or you're having an amygdala hijack, you lose on average 10 IQ points. So your argument is not as articulate or well-crafted and structured as it could have been because now you've gotten caught up in the emotion, and we never want to lose IQ points.
And that's true, because if people and anybody who's listening may know this, if you get angry at certain points, you get mad, somebody really gets underneath your skin, people will start to stumble or start to stutter or they'll say the wrong thing, and it's just like leaving you wide open.
Yeah. Yeah,
when you're distracted, when you're off, you can tell.
Absolutely.
And it shows. You had an anecdote in the book, and it jumped out to me because I'm very descriptive facially. Where and when you talked about this, it made me think of all the different times where it can read very well on my face. If I'm in a good mood, you know it as soon as I walk in the room. If I'm feeling something, you see it. It's right there. If I'm not feeling it, even if I think I'm just chilling, I'm good, I'm not. I'd have the worst poker face in the world. And there was an anecdote you gave in the book about you were at a meeting and a speaker. You could tell the speaker didn't know what he was talking about, or usually wouldn't know what he was talking about. And you thought you were doing a good job of kind of masking it, but somebody noticed it. And it turned out to be a very great teachable moment for you. You can go, and obviously I know people can read about it more in the book, but kind of go into that a little bit more here, just what that's like. And for people who or like me, whose face might tell on them a little bit. I always hear the old adage, like my mom or my aunt would say, fix your face.
Yeah.
And that's the first thing I think of.
I got that a lot as a kid myself.
You need to fix your face. That's the only thing I keep hearing in my mother's southern accent is that you got to fix your face. But how important is that to be able to kind of work on that aspect too, the facial cues and things we give away in body language?
So that's one of the things that I say, what are you not saying? Right? You know, what are you saying that you don't think that you're saying with your body language and your facial expressions? So the example you're referring to is I was in a new role and we were in this huge meeting. It was one of the most important meetings of the year. And the speaker was up there and he was all over the place. And I was thinking, this guy is all over the place. He has no idea what he's talking about, all these things. But I thought I was engaging still. And after the meeting, my new boss asked me into her office. And she said, you know, I want to give you some feedback. You thought he was incompetent. You thought all of these things. And I was like, how did she know that? She was like, it was written all over your face. And you looked just as bad in that meeting as he did.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa. Okay. And she's like, you have to manage that more effectively because you're delivering a message. What you think shows up in your body language and your facial expressions, no matter what you think you're doing, what the things that you're saying in your head show up. So I tell people, be conscious of that. So if you're thinking something negative, or if you're, even if you're like not confident, or you think these people are thinking this about me, it shows up in your body language. So you have to manage that, and you manage it with your mind and the stories that you're telling yourself and what you allow to seep in.
That's all a part of that self-awareness.
It's self-awareness.
It's such a huge thing is self-awareness. And I see this a lot in myself, where the older I've gotten, I've started to become a little bit more cognizant of how I, not only others perceive me, but how I look and thinking, okay, I need to do this better. Yeah. Where maybe in my 20s, I probably wouldn't have said, you know, no, that's not me. That's gotta be them. That's gotta be them doing this wrong. No, it's me. Yeah. And it's, that seems to be a tough part for people to figure out sometimes, is just the self-awareness aspect of it.
Let me tell you, I've had so many clients come to me being victims of what someone else was doing. And after we broke it down, it was them. And there were things that they could have done differently. Now, I'm not saying that the other people were not doing those things, but they were not looking at the options they had to maintain their power. And so that's what I really teach and coach a lot around, is how do you maintain your power? Because there's always an opportunity in every obstacle. But we focus so much on the obstacle, we miss the opportunity. So I help people to identify the opportunity in their obstacles so they can grow.
And what drew you to coaching? Because you had this very successful career in the pharmaceutical industry. But what was it that called you to want to help people, to be able to coach, to be able to teach?
I think a continuation of my grandmother's purpose of investing in people and all the investment that she did, investing that she did in me. And I started at one point in my career, I was coaching new hires. I was in the training department, and it's the job that I enjoyed the most in my life. I do a lot of mentoring and all of those things. And what I realize is that I get the greatest joy out of watching people go from point A to point B and playing a part in helping them get there. And so with the coaching component of it, I had a great executive coach at one point in my career when I was stuck, and he helped me get unstuck by making some changes within me. And I was like, wow, I would love to be able to do that for people. And so I was, as you said, very successful. I'd climbed the ladder and realized that I think the ladder was up against the wrong wall that I had climbed, because I was successful making more money than I ever thought that I would, but I was still unfulfilled and unhappy. So I started searching for my purpose. And I went to this event. I'll tell this story real quick, but I went to this event called The Life You Want. It was Oprah's tour. She was touring the country. Mm-hmm. And I went. It was like a 2-3-day event. And at one point, we had to write out what our lives would look like in full color. What would we like for our lives to look like? And I added, if money didn't matter and failure wasn't an option.
Wow.
And when I wrote it out, it was a very emotional time period, because what I realized is that I had never given myself the permission to think about what I would really want to do. It was always what I thought I could do or what I had to do versus what I wanted to do. And so I wrote it out, and I keep it on my coffee table at home now. Anytime I get frustrated or anything, I go back to it. But I wrote that I would be a coach. I wrote that I would spend my life living my purpose of investing in people full time, and that I would be an author with 3 books. So I'm already internationally certified, 1 book, 2 more books to go.
You're a third of the way there.
Yes.
How are you able to balance it? Because you're still working in this industry while coaching and writing this book. How have you been able to keep all that together? Because there are days where I struggle to remember where I put my glasses when I get up in the morning. It's like, you're out here doing all this. What makes you keep going? How are you able to pull this all off?
It's a great question. So I prioritize. Number one, I prioritize my energy and what I'm doing. But everything I do now at this point in my life is around my purpose. So everything, like the job that I do, I lead a team that generates over $950 million a year. But my job is to coach and to develop and all of those things with those people, and to give them feedback and to support them. And so that's part of my purpose. Right. And so with the book and with the coaching, it's all investing in people. So all of it can become a lot sometimes. You know, I have to step back and energize myself. But it's all purpose driven. So it's not as hard. But I have to prioritize my energy. And I've learned an important word. No. I have to say no to some things.
That's one of the most important words in the English language.
Yes. And I've learned that I have to say no to some things to say yes to the big things.
Exactly. And having that time, and a lot of that goes into
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness.
It all ties back in together.
Yeah, that's why I say that the EQ is 80% of success. And I'm not just saying it. Research shows it over and over. They've done it between 70 and 80% of people's success is going to be focused on emotional intelligence. And that's why I want to try to educate people a little bit more about it, because most people have heard about it, but they don't know their triggers. They don't know the four quadrants, and they don't know what to do in the moment to maintain control. And that's why I'm trying to give them those tips. And also, it's not that hard to do. That's what I want people to know. Managing your EQ, being aware, is the first step. You're already 10 steps ahead of the majority of people if you work on your self-awareness and you know about EQ and you know when you've been triggered or you have demonstrated a poor EQ, you're already ahead of the curve.
And we're only halfway through this conversation. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking about the types of attitudes you could possibly try to expect from political leaders who actually know how to get the job done. Plus, we try not to take things personally along the way in our next conversation. And Marion gives a very eye-opening answer to the question of what he feels throughout his remarkable career that he could have done a whole lot better. My name is J. Scott Smith, and this is the 89th episode of the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. We'll be back after this. You're listening to the People's Podcast.
What do you do if you forget a lyric?
I keep stepping.
This is JSC Radio.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment to make a moment. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
People are always looking to invest in a good opportunity. So what if you could invest in the future of kids, like a stock? Not the kind of stock that's about making money, but a stock for social change, called Better Futures. With your investment, it helps students like me go to college. My name is Charles, and I'm your dividend.
Invest in better futures with UNCF. Visit uncf.org/invest. A mind is a terrible thing to waste, but a wonderful thing to invest in. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
I'm not going to be responsible for what happens next.
This is JSC Radio.
You know, speaking on, you know, how you actually execute all of these ideas, what is like the most common mistake that you see millennials in particular making when they're trying to land a job?
It's actually networking. So they go in and they ask people for a job versus asking for insights. Mm. So it's a thing where people show up and they feel like they're around a lot of parasites. So the key thing I tell millennials to do is to go in and do some research before you get there, identify some people you want to learn something from, and ask them for some time to get insights on how they got to where they are versus asking for a job. Once you build a relationship, people will be willing to support you and help you. But if you come in asking and trying to take all the time, you turn people off.
This is the 89th episode of the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. Welcome back. J. Scott Smith here. Going to have more with Marion in a second. Again, want to thank my man, Doc Illingsworth, whose music you hear underneath you right now. Be sure to hit him up on the Twitter machine at Illingsworth. You can get at me on the Twitter machine at J. Scott Smith. That's J-A-Y-S-C-O, two T's, S-M-I-T-H. You can get at the show, of course, at JSC Radio. We're on the Facebook, also verified there, too, at Real J. Scott Smith. And we are on Instagram. Regardless of what you say, Instagram, you will verify me. I am also J. Scott Smith on Instagram. You can follow Marion on Twitter at Marion E. Brooks, at Marion E. Brooks on the Twitter machine and on Instagram. So now to get back to this conversation we were having, last we left off, we were talking about the value of self-awareness and emotional intelligence. Now we kind of get over to a different aspect of things, which includes not taking things personally. We'll get more into that and so much more as the conversation with Marion E. Brooks, the author of the best-selling book, What You Don't Know Is Hurting You, continues right here on the People's Podcast. This is JSC Radio. Let's get back to it.
As you talk about this, and I think about it, I mean, a lot of self-awareness is also understanding that you can't always take everything personally. I'm guilty of that. I'm full on guilty of that. I have an ego. Sometimes, even if they're not coming at me, I'm in my own head sometimes. It was like that. I think about when I was one of the first years I was playing baseball, and I had the kid overthrows me by a little bit. I was playing first base. Kid overshot me by about a half foot, ball goes over my glove. And I'm so in my head the rest of the way thinking, how did I screw this up? Instead of just saying, you got to let it go. The older you get, you let that go where, yeah, it happens, or you'll drop a ball or go through your legs. You don't let it haunt you that much. But I was hear it all the time. Don't take it personally. Don't take it personally. Well, how can I not take it personally? Well, now that I've got you in front of me, how can I and others not take things personally, whether it's criticism or shortcomings or intermittent failures, or not even failures, just things not going right? Things of that nature.
So I love that question, because it goes back to finding the opportunity in your obstacle, because there's always an opportunity, but people, again, get focused on the obstacle. And Nelson Mandela has this great quote. He says, I never lose. I either win or learn. So taking each situation as a learning opportunity of what you can do differently, more effectively, or more with more impact is the key to getting past that. But also not taking things personally. It's a great book, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. I live by this book, and it'll change your life if you follow the four agreements. The most important ones to me are don't take things personally, mm-hmm. and don't make assumptions. So I will sit back and I will say, okay, this situation happened and I felt this way and I behaved this way based on how I felt, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, that means, okay, I took that personally. And nothing that someone else does is personal towards you. It's always based on the story that they are telling themselves, the situation that they come from, their background. So being able to be conscious and say, okay, this person just did that. That has nothing to do with me. But what we do very often is we take other people's issues and make them our own when we get in our head about what they just did, or like someone passed by you and didn't speak today. And we start telling ourselves a story. Oh, they must be mad at me about the report, or this didn't happen, or maybe I'm not getting the promotion. So we start telling ourselves all these stories. And guess what happens when we start telling ourselves those stories? Our behaviors are focused on what the story we were telling ourselves and not reality. So we start behaving like this and the other person thinks we're crazy. So that's the risk of taking things personally. Don't make assumptions. Ask.
Always ask. And people are projecting essentially what they're dealing with onto you.
And onto you. And some of it is legitimate from their lens as far as their experiences or what they've been through. And when someone does that, typically this is what it means, but they are making assumptions and taking something personal. And a lot of the times I've had conversations with people where I've done that and I was thinking something. I said, I better ask them. And it's like, oh no, I'm sorry. I was seeming distant today. My mother's sick. And you feel like an idiot at that point because you've told yourself this whole story
exactly,
around what they're doing.
No, exactly. No, I get that. And I find myself seeing that from others. And it's just where so often than not, they're thinking that, oh, I've had people ask me, it's like, were you in a bad mood? Did I do something wrong? I was like, no, I didn't even realize. That goes back to maybe my face might tell a different story. But, but I just go like, no, actually, this is not an issue at all. I didn't know you had a problem. And then by that point, it's all hashed out.
Yes.
Because sometimes it's just as simple as a miscommunication.
Communication. So, and then also, though, when people do certain things, not taking it personal is extremely important, like really important, because sometimes you be like, no, they did that on purpose. Yes, they may have done that on purpose, but it had nothing to do with you. It could have been any old person in the world that they would have done that to. So it's not personal towards you. Now, you don't have to accept that type of behavior from anyone, but you can't take it on and make it your issue.
Exactly.
Don't take other people's issues and make them your own. And that's what you do when you take it personal.
You can't carry somebody else's weight.
You cannot carry their weight.
It makes total sense. And you mentioned earlier, you talked about how some people who had high emotional EQ and are able to kind of let that stuff just go right off their back, like the likes of Oprah, where I've seen so many speeches where she just, it doesn't even faze her, doesn't even bother her. Does it bother her? There are guys like Barack Obama, where I just recently had seen where he was doing a campaign stop for Andrew Gillum, and there's a heckler in there, and he just handles it just so smoothly.
That's the EQ, because he handled the man. Now, his objective, so it's really important, anytime you're doing those types of things, what is your objective? His objective in that situation that you're describing was to defuse the man. And he did it. And who looked like the leader? He didn't start yelling back at him. He didn't start to lose control. He showed up as the leader, and he kind of scolded the man in a nice way and said, "Hey, do you realize what you're doing?
Yeah. Are you here to support us? Are you here to support? What's the point?" And he's very, very calm, very cool. Some of the all-time great athletes have the same kind of mindset. Things don't rattle, and things get tight. The tight game late. Either ninth inning of a baseball game, fourth quarter of a basketball game, football game, and they aren't sweating.
Yeah.
They aren't worrying about it. You can tell they're not panicking, and you see that. When we talked about that earlier, you brought up Obama, and we're in the midst of an election.
Yes.
And you look at some of our elected officials. I'm not going to name any names, but they know what I'm talking about. And there's some elected officials where you see them, and could be particular political party, because there are some on both sides who could do a lot better job of this. What should voters look for in their elected officials? What should people look for in their elected officials when it comes time to vote them in, what you're going to run? What should you look for in someone running for political office at any level?
For me, it's extremely important to have someone who manages themselves as a leader in all situations. And it's really critical. Like, people with low emotional intelligence, they can be successful to a point, but what you have to realize, especially if they are a leader, I don't care if they are the city council or, you know, the Senate, what happens is that when you have low emotional intelligence, you don't keep A players on your team. Because A players will not deal with that type of behavior, because guess what? They have options.
Exactly.
B players have options. So eventually you're going to end up with a bunch of C and D players who can't do any better on your team. And so if you're leading something for a larger group, the group is going to suffer, whether it's the schools in your district or it's your state, because you will be ineffective because you will not be able to keep the best people on your team. And that's what people don't understand. When you're looking at political leaders, you need someone who's going to be able to keep the best people around them, because we are much smarter than me, is what I always tell people. So you need smart people around you. And if you want the best, you have to show emotional intelligence, you have to show respect, and you always have to treat people with dignity. And if you're not doing that, you're going to lose people.
The team, you're only as good as the team around you.
You're only as good as the team around you. And people with low emotional intelligence, they can start off with a great team, but they're going to eventually end up with a D team, because those are the people who are like, well, I don't care. And the other thing, as far as that is concerned, is that people won't work as hard for you. They will do their job and they will go home. Now, if people feel that you respect them and that you're investing in them, and that if they make a mistake, you're going to protect them and help them to grow, they're going to work much harder for you. And I've done it, and I've had people do it for me. You go above and beyond for those types of people. People who are not treating you with respect or that you don't trust, you don't work as hard. And I think if everyone thinks about that, they're like, okay, I'm getting my check, I have to do this, and at 5 o'clock, I'm out of here. Where the other people are like, well, it's 7, but I don't want to disappoint Jay.
Exactly.
And so I'm going to work harder for Jay because I don't want to disappoint him. And this is my definition. The difference between a manager and a leader is managers require people to do things. Leaders inspire people to do things. And you want a politician that inspires people to do things, because they'll do a lot more.
When I hear that, it's, and again, this is something you can apply to so many different things. You can apply it to politics. You can apply it to whether you're working in a newsroom. If you're an athlete or you're a coach, if you're trying to coach somebody, it's the same thing. I haven't played football. When I played football, I still think about the stuff my football coach said to me. And it's 22, 23 years ago. But there were things he said, and he always inspires you to want to do more. And even at his advanced age now, if I still talk to him, he still has something to say. He still has those gems. And hearing that, it does make sense, because I've worked with people where as soon as they start talking, you know, I want to run through a wall for this guy.
Yes.
I would. Did you tell me what you need me to do? I don't care if it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Let me jump in the shower, go get ready, and we'll make this rock and roll. And I've also, and as you mentioned there too, one of my favorite movies is Office Space. And I still think of a point where Peter is sitting there talking to his bosses, and he says,
"The thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care."
Don't
don't care.
It's a problem of motivation, all right? Now, if I work my ass off and Inditex ships a few extra units, I don't see another dime. So where's the motivation? And here's something else, Bob. I have 8 different bosses right now.
Beg your pardon?
8 bosses.
8?
8, Bob. So that means that when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job. But you know, Bob, that'll only make someone work just hard enough not to get fired.
And you don't want to be the guy who just does enough to avoid getting fired. That's where things, and people should really definitely need to read this book. And before I get to that, I have to ask this question. Of all the success you've had, what is something that you wish you could do over? Is there something that maybe you're saying, hey, it turned out really well, but it could have been better? Or is there something you maybe missed on that you thought you could improve on? And kind of looking, being a little self-reflective in everything that you've done.
So for me, it would be with my children. So I raised my daughter and my 3 nieces. And I think I could have been a better father at times. I think I could have been more focused.
Wow.
Because I wasn't always present, because I was running from poverty. Right. So I didn't want to be poor anymore. So I was working so hard versus running towards prosperity. So sometime when I was together with them, I wasn't always as present as I should have been. And that's one of the things that I look back on and I wish I had done differently.
Wow. That kind of caught me off guard there. I was you raised a daughter plus your 3 nieces.
Yes. I've been the father figure for all of them, and they're my children, and I love them all. And they're amazing young ladies. Like, when everyone asked me, what's your greatest accomplishment? I was like, being their father, watching these young ladies turn into who they become and playing a part in it. That's my greatest success.
That was actually going to be my next question.
Yeah.
Is what you consider your greatest success? And clearly, you just noted it's your kids.
Oh, yeah. Those young ladies, they're just phenomenal. And being their father has been my greatest joy.
I would like to simply close it out with this. What's a message to somebody who's, and by the way, I should note Nathan Hale Williams, who
yes.
also helped you with this book, and his name is right on the cover of the book with you. Nathan Hale Williams, the two of you did such an awesome job on this book. Leaving this discussion here, what is a message you would like to give to people who may be dealing with issues in their office or trying to figure out maybe a new career or where they can go next? What would you suggest for them to do, say, if right now they're at a crossroads of how can I get better at my job, or I feel kind of like where you were. Mm-hmm. I've been so successful, but there's so much more I want to do. What kind of advice would you give to somebody listening right now who's maybe on those crossroads?
So if you're in a crossroads right now, I would say the main thing you need to realize is that you have power and you have options. And when we feel stuck, when we feel frustrated, or when we feel insecure about a role or what we're doing, it's usually because we see scarcity versus opportunity. So realize that you always have power, you always have options. The key thing is to realize and understand that you might not like all of the options, but the more you explore the options, the more options come towards you. What you focus on grows. What you focus on grows is what I always tell people. So if you focus on the negative, you focus on what's happening, and you focus on and put all your energy around that negative thing, it gets bigger and bigger, and more people start to say, yes, they shouldn't be doing that to you, or, oh, poor you. And so that becomes bigger. But if you start focusing on and asking yourself, what are the options here? What are the other things that I can do to ultimately get to where I want to go? The universe starts to show you different options, and then different people start to come into your life, and different situations occur, and you're like, wow. So always know that you have options, and what you focus on grows. So focus on success. That's what I would say.
Where can people get the book? It's a simple question. Where can people find this book?
So they can get it at Amazon.com, and they can also get it at my website, MarionEBrooks.com. MarionE, don't forget the E, Brooks.
And you told me an interesting story about why that E is there in Marion E. Brooks, to make sure we're not just saying Marion Brooks. What is the story behind the E in Marion E. Brooks?
So I'm named after my great uncle, Dr. Marion J. Brooks, but it was just Dr. Marion Brooks. And in Fort Worth, Texas, he was the first African-American doctor to have credentials at the hospital. So if you Google Marion Brooks, Fort Worth, it comes up. He is Marion Brooks. I'm Marion E. Brooks, because Dr. Brooks will always be the original Marion Brooks.
It's the same thing when people refer to me as Mr. Smith. I always say, no, Mr. Smith's back in Detroit. you can just call me Jay. Marion E. Brooks, what you don't know is hurting you. The four keys to a phenomenal career, obviously with help from Nathan Hale Williams. Thank you so much for coming on JSC Radio. I hope anybody who's listening to this, I hope you've gotten a ton out of this. We're going to make sure that we have the link, the Amazon link to this book, as well as a link to your website in the description on this podcast, by the way, to make sure people can get an opportunity to get a hold of this amazing book. Marion E. Brooks, thank you so much for coming on JSC Radio.
Thank you, Jay. I had a great time. I appreciate it.
And there you have it. Another one in the books. Remember, here on JSC Radio, we don't do interviews. We have conversations. And I want to thank Marion Brooks for taking the time to have a conversation with me in the midst of his crazy schedule. That brother is back down in Texas right now taking care of business. So I want to shout out to him. See, this is what happens when you get a Sigma and a Noop in the room. All sorts of great things happen along the way. I want to shout out Giselle Phelps of GJP Media, who helped put this entire thing together. She did a hell of a job setting this whole thing up for me. She's awesome. One of my favorite Canadians ever. And I want to make sure I shout her out. Be sure to follow GJP Media on social media. And I just want to thank each and every one of y'all for supporting this show. There will be a link to Marion's book. You can get it on Amazon. It's going to be in the description of this thing. And don't think the conversation's in there. Be sure to check us out next week for another milestone, the 90th episode of JSC Radio, as I bring in Dr. Jennifer Caudill, as we get to talk about your health, my health, and everybody else's health right here on the People's Podcast. My name is J. Scott Smith, telling you to take care of yourself. God bless. Always dare to be different. Always have your pets spayed or neutered. And remember to adopt. And don't shop. And we are out of here. Of course, all the love in the world to those of you in Thousand Oaks, California. You've been through so much, but we still got your back out here. Until next time, goodbye, everybody.
I have 8 different bosses right now.
I beg your pardon?
8 bosses.
8?
8, Bob. So that means that when I make a mistake, I have 8 different people coming by to tell me about it. That's my only real motivation, is not to be hassled. That and the fear of losing my job, but you know, Bob, that'll only make someone work just hard enough not to get fired.
You're listening to the People's Podcast.
Have you ever been unemployed? Were you nervous then?
Yeah.
All right.
This is JSC Radio.
I heard on the news about that 5-year-old who found his uncle's gun. The kid didn't know it was loaded.
I heard on the news about that 14-year-old girl who was bullied online. For like a year, she couldn't take it anymore, so she got her dad's gun from his nightstand.
I heard on the news about that guy who broke into someone's house, stole a gun from the hall closet.
He accidentally shot his cousin in the head.
She killed herself.
And later, killed the owner of the store he was trying to rob.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
All trains go to real places. That's the least we expect from a train, isn't it? The bare minimum. But Virgin trains also go to imaginary places. Ooh. Like alien planets and distant lands and romantic places where the rain's not annoying. It's sexy. In fact, Beam, our onboard entertainment service, is stuffed to the eyeballs with a whole host of films and TV shows. So you can give your mind a detour while your body goes straight to your destination. A real one. Virgin Trains.